When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by JC Abbott. John Hodge is off. Today, we're discussing Chad Kelly's reinstatement by the CFL.
New ownership in Edmonton.
A controversial call in the Riders' loss to Montreal.
An all-star receiver returning north from the NFL.
And the passing of a legendary CFL offensive line coach. But first, Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke has made his triumphant return to the Canadian Football League, signing a three-year contract with the BC Lions worth around $750,000 in 2025 and over $800,000 in 2026. That didn't equate to success, in his first start Sunday against the Blue Bombers, as the Victoria-born passer went 8 of 25 for 126 yards and two interceptions in a 20-11 loss against Winnipeg, later issuing a public apology. JC, is Rourke worth all the money and hype?
Yes, he still is. Even after that game, nothing has changed. And quite frankly, we can all get caught up in the storyline that is Nathan Rourke and everything that it means to us that follow the CFL. I was guilty of it this week. I picked the Lions to win. I had big expectations for Rourke. But that wasn't fair to him. And frankly, it wasn't fair for the BC Lions to start him this week. As much as he wanted to do that and he wanted to knock the rust off, it was a bad situation to place him in. And with all the eyeballs looking at him across the country on TSN, I know there's great TV numbers, but also 30,000 people in the stadium at BC Place, he simply didn't deliver, and he wore that on his shoulders post-game, insisting before any of us asked him a question that he be able to say his piece and publicly apologize to both his teammates and the fans who came out to watch him. This is his fifth offense in a year, and that matters, right? As much as he's been in the system before, there's a lot knocking around in that brain after his NFL journey, and it was going to take some time for him to get back adjusted. This is not the same receiving core that he threw to in 2022. Keon Hatcher is really the only guy who started in both of those years. Most of the other pieces are brand new to him. He's got to build that chemistry. He's got to build his role on the team and reestablish himself as a leader. To expect him to go out and put up incredible numbers in his first start simply wasn't a reasonable expectation. And I think the Lions know that, because last year or 2 years ago when they brought in VA, when Rourke got hurt, they didn't play him the first week on a week of practice. They sat him and they waited an extra week because they knew that he was not going to be ready that quickly. Unfortunately, they put Rourke in a situation where he had to be. The results were predictable.
I didn't think he would play as poorly as he did, especially when you saw Nathan Rourke that first drive. He looked pretty composed. They got a couple first downs. I thought, okay, here they go. And Javon Coy did have a big drop, I felt like, on that corner ball that could have ignited the offense. That said, let's think of the extended week that was for Nathan Rourke, okay? On a Friday night, he's playing the fourth quarter of a preseason game with the Atlanta Falcons. A couple days later, he's released. Then he clears NFL waivers, and he's got this massive decision to make. Do I continue going after the NFL, or do I go back to the CFL, try to re-spark, if you will, that interest from NFL teams by, ideally from his standpoint, going and dominating in Canada? Because I don't think it's been talked about a lot that he still has that NFL window every offseason in his contract if he wants to go explore that. Or do I take this large sum of money that's on the table for me in a prorated contract for 2024, around $250,000, and in 2025 and 2026, we stated the numbers, around $750,000 and over $800,000 in 2026. That is astronomical CFL money. Money, dare I say, from what I've talked to and people around the league, that has not been seen since Doug Flutie or even Rocket Ishmael signing with the Toronto Argonauts all the way back in the 1990s. So it is definitely money that the BC Lions put in front of him. And I think this is just speculation and analysis, perhaps persuaded him to come back to the BC Lions where he could actually play football and earn a massive living instead of competing for a practice roster spot, which is where I think the NFL had kind of settled in terms of the opportunities for him really in the middle of training camp. It would have been a much better situation for him to either go through a full training camp with the New York Giants or a different team and have a shot at least to compete to stay on the roster. As far as starting him goes, I can understand it from the BC Lions perspective, especially Amar Doman, Neil McAvoy, and Rick Campbell. You have a home game, you're trying to sell tickets, Vernon Adams Jr. is injured, and Rourke, from a talent standpoint, is by far your best option. Was it fair to him? Possibly not, but he wore everything. And that's what I think draws a lot of people to Nathan Rourke, is he is honest, he's hardworking, he is quintessentially Canadian, and he definitely will get better as his time with the BC Lions, the 2024 version, goes along.
Yeah, I do want to clear the air on one particular subject, because I know there's a lot of Nathan Rourke haters online who, for some reason, resent him for taking that NFL opportunity and have this idea that he thought he was too big for the CFL and he came back this week and thought he could dominate and this is all his fault for somehow thinking he was bigger than Lee. That is not the case at all. The Lions wanted Rourke to start. He was comfortable making that start. But Rourke hates the hype. As legitimately as any athlete I have ever been around, he despises the attention that he receives. It makes him very uncomfortable, and he tries at every opportunity to diminish and dismiss it and put all the emphasis on his teammates and everything around him to credit when he has success. And on this occasion, when there was a failure, he took all the responsibility on his own shoulders, despite the fact that there was a number of things he could have used as a very valid excuses to explain what happened in that football game against what is, quite frankly, the best secondary in the CFL right now. So I have nothing but the utmost respect for Nathan Rourke, and it's those very traits, those very elements of his personality that are going to allow him to bounce back from this and to get back to form, because we saw the flashes of the physical talent, right? He was pretty good on that first drive. You could see he wasn't quite seeing things the way he wanted to, but it was there. The throws were there. It was only once he started pressing, they were down. I think he felt the pressure of the moment a little bit where things got away from him. But even then, some of the escapes he made, some of the runs when he was under pressure, you see the elite talent that is there, the guy that we had in 2022. I don't know if he'll be all the way back to that this week, but he's certainly going to be closer to it. And I think in 2 or 3 weeks' time, as we get into the stretch run of the season, you're going to see the same Nathan Rourke that we all expected when he signed this big contract, because he is that type of guy, and he is unique in his ability to shoulder this burden.
JC, we're hard on you on the podcast, excuse me, sometimes maybe because you're the young buck, and I got to give it to you here. And I mean, give it to you in the way that I'm going to rib you, because I told you on the pod that his likely destination was going to be the BC Lions and that they wouldn't care that Vernon Adams Jr. was there and they would figure it out later. So I want to give you a chance to rebut that before I continue on gloating about what I told you would happen, JC. I told you this would happen.
For the record, I never said that BC was not the most likely destination. I thought it was, because Nathan has always made it clear that he wants to return here. I don't think it's been spoken about a ton in the media, but he's purchased a house in Vancouver. He did that before he went off to the NFL. That's a big investment. He sees this as home, even though he was raised in Oakville. His whole family moved out here when he first played for the BC Lions as a young buck. like myself, he was living in his parents' basement at the time. His mom was driving him to practice in the minivan that tremendous 2022 season. Now he's got his own place with his wife. But this is where they want to call home, and I think it was about more than money for him there. In terms of the BC Lions aspect, the fact that this happened this early, I think, is extremely good for them, because if it had happened late in next offseason, if Rourke had gone into February with an NFL contract and tried to grab another deal going into the 2025 season.
No,
and
then they all still would have figured it out, man.
They may have figured it out. It would have put them in a more difficult situation. Now they can hang on to VA in case there's a worst case scenario. And now they've got the two best quarterbacks in the league there for a push at a home Grey Cup, and in the offseason, early on, as soon as November's over, they can make that move, and there will be a market for Vernon Adams Jr., because he would upgrade a number of clubs in the CFL.
Here's what I don't get from CFL fans, okay? You don't want your players to leave to go to the NFL, but when we start talking about marketing money, you seem to have an issue with it. I have no issues with players getting paid the way Nathan Rourke did. And I have no issues with CFL salaries, ideally in the future, getting ratcheted up. And I know that we shouldn't do this, but just look at the NFL and the way their salaries have escalated over the years, you know, going back to those days in the 1990s. It wasn't that long ago where the CFL was paying up to bring players who are American to the CFL instead of going to the NFL. So when we talk about this marketing money, I have no issue with it, because this is the rule that has been set forth, that there is currently no cap on marketing money in the Canadian Football League. And arguably, it has helped Nathan Rourke come back to the CFL. And yes, does it allow the BC Lions to fit Rourke into their salary cap with Vernon Adams Jr.? Undoubtedly so. But I don't have an issue with keeping Canadian talent, or even getting some of the American talent up here that we deem elite, into the CFL via marketing money or what have you. These players deserve to be paid. So I don't want to hear it out of both sides of CFL fans' mouths, because it seems like that's what happens. And to your point, JC, about the CFL fans who think Nathan Rourke thought that he was above the CFL, he's never, ever said that. He's always had an immense amount of respect for the Canadian Football League, being a Canadian, born in Victoria, raised in Oakville, and he wanted to go chase that dream of playing in the NFL for multiple reasons, but one of them is that financial upside. That is undeniable. He knew that this kind of money that he got on this contract with the BC Lions was always going to be here. It's not disrespectful. He's just doing, or did, excuse me, what was best for him. Full credit to Amar Doman for paying up to get him back to the Canadian Football League. And the league as a whole, and TSN, its broadcaster, has already seen the uptick. The game, I'll call the Nathan Rourke Return Contest, BC Lions hosting the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, was the highest rated game so far during the 2024 CFL season, averaging over 750,000 viewers on TSN on Sunday night, okay? That's the kind of uptick we're talking about with Nathan Rourke. It is real. It is tangible. It is beautiful. So CFL fans, just enjoy it.
That is a particularly astounding number, because that was not a good football game to watch. The fact that they were able to average that throughout, even with everything that was going on the field, is a testament to just how much so many people in this country want Nathan to succeed. I think it's a really beautiful thing to witness.
Nathan and Canadian quarterbacks. Let's not forget that, okay? Canadian quarterbacks for the win, baby.
All right. The CFL reinstated Toronto Argonauts quarterback Chad Kelly on Sunday following the completion of his 9-game suspension for violating the league's gender-based violence policy. Head coach Ryan Dinwiddie has announced the reigning MOP will start on Thursday against Saskatchewan, though he remains on a last-chance agreement with the CFL head office and must meet certain conditions to remain employed. Dunk, you were there when Kelly spoke to the media for the first time today. What were your impressions?
I thought it was a lot of PR speak, so to speak, public relations speak that he had been coached on. You know, he knows how to memorize a playbook. I think he did well in memorizing the public relations playbook that the Toronto Argos and Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment wanted him to continually go back to and recite from. And I will say, I got the sense that Chad Kelly is approaching this at least in a little bit more of a mature way. I do want to give him some credit here, but really, we are not going to know if Kelly is a different person until he goes about his business in terms of what he's talking about. There was a lot of talk that was overarching, that was in broad strokes, that lacked detail. I specifically asked Kelly, what are the ongoing specifications laid out in this last chance agreement? And he didn't provide the detail that was asked in the question. Now, I understand perhaps the CFL and the Argos and Kelly want to keep those behind closed doors. But in this situation, I believe transparency is key. And if Kelly wants to somehow try to, I don't even know if this is a word, but re-endear himself to CFL fans and specifically female fans, then I think the transparency would have been warranted in this situation. I will say full credit to Chad Kelly for facing the horde of media at Argos practice at Lamport Stadium. That is the biggest contingent that anyone around the Argos has seen from media in recent history, perhaps ever. I don't want to go way back, you know, to when Rocket Ishmael was here, John Candy, Wayne Gretzky, and that ownership group and the rest. So I don't want to say it's the biggest ever, but it's the biggest that I've heard about or seen in recent memory for sure. He stood there. He answered the questions in a tone that I thought was much different than what we've seen from Kelly. I don't want to say it was a remorseful tone, but I think he actually understands the enormity of what has alleged to have happened here. The one key that I will add is that I asked him directly if he has apologized to the plaintiff or former assistant strength and conditioning coach, and he said, I will not speak on that. So let that say to you what it does.
Yeah, to me, it was telling that there were only two questions that he did not choose to answer. He answered one of them, but didn't actually answer the question. He said words, but it had nothing to do with what you asked. They were both your questions, and they are both things to me that would be important to be transparent on if you were truly remorseful and you're truly interested in mending bridges. If you're doing all the things that you say in this speech, and I understand that there may be legal hiccups that prevent you from talking to the victim or something of that nature, but even a statement sent through your legal counsel, now that it's been settled, I don't know how you can say the things that Chad said in the statement legitimately and then not apologize or not say that you've apologized. It was curious to me, to say the least. With that said, and as much as I am skeptical of Chad Kelly's maturity, we do need to allow there to be an opportunity for growth here. No matter what the circumstance is, I think it behooves us as human beings, no matter how egregious the crime, to allow people to grow and change. Chad Kelly has to earn our trust back. I think that's fair. And people are right to be as critical of him as they want right now. They're right to boo him if they take the field. They're right if they don't want the Argos to have him on the roster. That is all their right. But as a person, as a human being, we do have to allow him some time to show us that maybe he is doing the things that he said in this address, that he is an improved person, that he realizes the gravity of the situation. Only time will tell if those things are true, but there is no point to us simply throwing out the potential for someone to better themselves in any circumstance, right? If he's legitimate, if he means what he says, then once we see that, we should embrace him. Until then, I think it's fair to be skeptical.
Definitely agree. And these words only really mean anything if he turns them into actions. And I think that's what a lot of people are waiting for. But then there's the other people, JC, you sort of alluded to this, that don't believe that he deserves the chance to even play football again. I do believe that there's a major difference here from how the CFL has operated within what's gone on here, the lawsuit, commissioning their independent investigation, making sure Chad Kelly goes through all of the stipulations laid out to have a chance at being reinstated. I do think the CFL has actually come down fairly hard on Chad Kelly, but I am still at a loss for the Toronto Argonauts as a franchise. I want to hear from the Toronto Argonauts. I don't care if it's Keith Pelley, the new president and CEO of MLSE, if it's Michael Pinball Clemens, if it's Ryan Dinwiddie, if it's Chad Kelly. I want to hear from the top people within the Toronto Argonauts for how they are approaching this situation and being better in the future. We have not heard that. And the only actions that we can go off of is the Argos believing that it was okay to have Chad Kelly at a training camp practice in May after the suspension was levied. Yes, by the letter of the law, that was allowed by the CFL and within the collective bargaining agreement. But you have to understand the gravity and the magnitude of the situation and what's been alleged here against Chad Kelly. So I would like to hear directly from the franchise and not just a cut and pasted quote. I want to hear what they are tangibly actually doing. That's why I asked Chad Kelly, what are the stipulations in your last chance agreement? What are the things that you have worked on, right? He talked in a lot of generalities, and I understand that from a public relations standpoint, that's what you want to do, and you hope that it blows over at some point. But to me, I want to hear tangibly those things. And the other thing that I'll say that really stuck out to me was the fact that you have all this media here. This is the biggest story of the day, arguably, of the CFL season, if a positive one in Nathan Rourke doesn't overtake it. And there are media being told that Ryan Dinwiddie is only taking football questions. Well, JC, I'll steal a line from you. Anything to do with Chad Kelly is a football question. I don't care when the media shows up, if it's on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, day one, two, three of practice, or post game. These questions should be allowed to be asked. And if they don't want to answer, that's their right not to answer. But as long as Chad Kelly is playing football and there are still questions about anything to do with him, those are football questions, and there are going to be many of those questions continuing to be asked, because this is not just a sports story. This is a news story, okay? We're talking about the biggest news outlets, not just in Toronto, but in the country that were there. CBC, CP24, which is a 24-hour, 365 news station in Toronto. For as much as people give Sportsnet flack about not covering the CFL enough, this was big enough that Sportsnet had a camera there. Obviously, TSN was there. CTV was there alongside Three Down Nation and some other affiliated outlets. When the big media people come, and I don't even care, big or small, and have questions that they at least want to ask, those should be allowed to be asked.
Yeah, you make a very cogent point on the Argos not doing as much as we hope to address this and to take responsibility as an organization, because I think one of the reasons why people are so up in arms about Chad Kelly, beyond what he was accused of, is the difference in how it's being handled here in this situation in pro football versus how it would be in real life. If you had a criminal charge, generally, unless you are actually put in prison, that does not affect your work. Unless it's a public thing that flies back in the face of your employer, you can be charged with something criminally, you can go through that process, it's not going to affect your job. But if you are in the workplace harassing somebody, I mean, we have sexual harassment training at our company. I had to go through it. I would not be able to keep my job if that was the case, right? If I did something of that nature. And everybody who works in any form of any job knows that, because those are the standards that they are held to in their own workplace. So beyond the football aspect, right, Chad Kelly is an employee of the Toronto Argonauts, and people are wondering, well, why is this employee not being handled by his employer in the way that it would seem any other employee would be handled, right? Is somebody who works in ticket sales for the Toronto Argonauts allowed to engage in sexual harassment and keep their job after a small suspension, right? These are the questions that people would want to ask that organization. And I think those things matter to.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All of us, right, across all workplaces, as we engage in this process of making a better society that is more equal for people of all genders and races and ethnicities, that we have these processes in place and that we're accountable when things like this happen, that the people in charge answer these questions and set forward the plans and the expectations and the punishments when these things occur.
After 75 years as a community-owned team, the Edmonton Elks are officially under private ownership. Former construction business owner and longtime season ticket holder Larry Thompson has taken control of the franchise, teasing the potential for a new stadium, but remains noncommittal on the team's name in the future. What do you make of the new man at the top?
Well, I don't think he is somebody who necessarily inspires a lot of excitement, certainly as a personality. Now, that's not necessarily a requirement for an owner. We have these grandiose expectations because the last two that have come in Amar Doman and Pierre-Carl Pelletot in Montreal, are both very charismatic guys. They are both guys who know how to operate the media. Larry Thompson does not appear to be that in his early interactions. He's not a great interview. He's not a great public speaker. But as long as he cashes the checks or he signs the checks and he puts the right people in charge, hires the right people to make the correct decisions to get this team back on track, then he's going to be a fantastic owner. I have some reservations about some of the speculation that came out about potentially going back to the old name. I know that it seemed like Randy Ambrosi and Mr. Thompson tamped that down a little bit in the press conference. We'll see where that storylines go. I think that would be a mistake. I also think it would be a mistake just to focus on the history of this franchise, because as tremendous as it is, and as much as that appeals to people of Mr. Thompson's ilk, and the people that he sat in those seats with of his age demographic, if the Edmonton Elks want to be successful at the box office and in that city, they need to appeal to new fans, to a younger demographic, to a more diverse demographic. And I'm not sure if Mr. Thompson is the guy to do that. Now, he can hire someone as the team president who can then hire other people who can do that job. It's not to say that because he is a older white man that Larry Thompson is going to set this franchise back. That is not true. As long as he makes smart hiring decisions, we can grow this thing to what it once was with a whole new demographic of fans. But those decisions still have to be made. And until they are, we won't know what his ownership looks like.
It'll be really intriguing to see what's possible with the Double E franchise. I think that's how Larry Thompson wants them to be known, based on the signage and imaging around Commonwealth Stadium when he was officially introduced as the new owner. Approaches the team, it sounds like he has very, 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 very deep pockets, to use the cliche, and that this Edmonton franchise will be very well-funded going into the future. But there's a lot of work to be done here. To have a new owner, talking about building a new stadium is incredible. I think that actually could help out in that market a lot. People will tell you that, yes, Commonwealth has had some updates, but that it's too cavernous and some of the sight lines are, you know, pretty far away from the field. And that if there was a new building there, let's say in and around the 30 to 35,000 seat range, which perhaps can expand to a little more, that that would actually be ideal. And if there was a new stadium built, Dustin Nielsen, who's out there running Edmonton Sports Talk and the Nielsen Show within that media operation, told me he feels like they could attract some better acts in terms of concerts out there as well, that that would be intriguing. I would just like to see the franchise get back to respectability on all fronts and being consistently competitive on the field. I think we've seen that since Chris Jones has left. There's a renewed energy around the team, and certainly Canadian quarterback Trey Ford helped with that. But I want to see this franchise reintroduce itself and earn the trust back of the fans out there of the Double E.
A rising tide lifts all boats. And Aniel Burton will tell you, if Edmonton is able to get a new stadium, either by Thompson playing a significant amount out of pocket or getting the provincial government and the municipal government on board to help him with that project, if that happens, and it's a big if, that would be huge in terms of helping Calgary with their pitch to replace McMahon as well. Because if the provincial government is helping Edmonton, well, then they've got to help Calgary as well. So if he is true to his word on that and he's able to get some momentum on that, it could help a number of CFL franchises and the league as a whole in terms of getting new buildings. The CFL listened to our colleague John Hodge this week and reportedly put out new guidelines for their controversial command center, insisting they only overturn calls when they are clear and obvious. That didn't stop Rider Nation from getting up in arms after Montreal Alouettes quarterback Davis Alexander appeared to step out of bounds on his game-winning touchdown run on Friday night. Dunk, was he in or was he out?
Ooh. It looked like, I believe, the right foot that was in question touched first down in bounds, and then it slides. And from my vantage point, I didn't have all the command center angles, appeared as though he was out of bounds. And as much as Rider Nation was upset with the call, they weren't necessarily blaming just that call on losing to the Montreal Alouettes. I felt like a lot more of their frustration and anger was directed at Brett Lawther, who missed four field goals in that game. One of them was brought back by James Letcher Jr. for a touchdown that completely swung the game. So I feel like there wasn't as much scrutiny on the loss being the result of the command center call as there was the week before.
Tell that to Rider my Twitter Nation. Mentions. Come on now.
Yeah, fair.
I was fighting
but
for my life out there.
Overall, I just think more of the anger was directed at Brett Lawther, that it's time the command center got back to that, just overturning the clear and obvious and also keeping the games moving. I think there's something to be said for that, that let's get those right and keep it moving. But this call with Davis Alexander, I would love to see and have an explanation as to what the command center based the call on. It's the same thing the week before with the roughing the passer on Dustin Crum, extending that double overtime game in Ottawa. Can we get an explanation from the command center? Because something would be better than pure silence. And I feel like, you know, we see that in the NHL with some of the decisions that they make, or even in the NFL with the decisions that are made when they go to video replay, excuse me. So I think if the league as a whole help the command center by just explaining the process they went through, that a lot of people could understand it more. Perhaps they had a top-down angle from some unknown blimp or satellite zoomed in to see some blades of green between Davis Alexander's cleat and the sideline, because it was really close. But those are the kind of calls that might not be so obvious, but you need a clear outcome on it. And I think an explanation would help fans at least understand a little bit and hold them at bay.
Yeah, you and I are on completely the same page on that particular topic. I believe an explanation is always merited, and the league would be better off if they allowed that to happen. However, I think the command center got the call right here, and I'll explain why. I don't actually know if Davis Alexander was in bounds or out of bounds. It's basically impossible to tell, right? It appears that the foot is on the white line after it pivots and plants in bounds, and as he's turning and driving off of it, that it turns a little bit. But also, his other foot's on the ground at that point, and he's lifting his stride. So is his foot actually in contact with the ground, or is it just hovering off it by a few millimeters? It's impossible to tell from that angle as he's pivoting and lifting the leg, because you are allowed to have limbs or things out of bounds as long as they don't actually touch the ground. So given that information, those video angles and those still photographs and the Zapruder film that the Rider Nation has put together, none of that is conclusive. And when you've just had a top-down edict to your command center that you're only going to overturn things when they are clear and obvious, and there is conclusive evidence that the wrong call was made, then you have to go with the call on the field. I think the same would be true if Alexander was called out of bounds on the field. That call would have stood and should have stood. They called him inbounds, and there wasn't enough to overturn it. This was the command center doing its job properly, based on the criticisms that they had faced in the past, changing course and doing their jobs.
The Hamilton Tiger Cats have shaken up their coaching staff yet again. I don't know who Coach Milanovic is going to blame now, but anyways, it came after an embarrassing loss to Edmonton. Mark Washington was fired, oddly enough, and Chris Jones, the old Elks head coach, was brought in to replace him, even though he has a different title. Does hiring Jones make any sense in the Hammer?
So let's lay this out. The Ticats think that they have the worst defense in the CFL. They're panicked. They fire Mark Washington.
I think the stats bear that out. It is the worst defense.
So you go out and you hire the man to fix it. The man responsible for the second worst defense in the CFL. That does not make any sense. Look, I don't think we should write Chris Jones off. He's shown his pedigree in the past as just a defensive coordinator that he can do that. This was not a move that needed to be made right now. This was not the guy to bring in to change it. I think Chris Jones needed some time away to reflect and figure out how to run a defense again, and the Ticats aren't going to be any better off with him there. To your point, Dunk, I don't know who Milanovic is going to blame next or fire next. He's already fired the special teams coach. He's fired the defensive coordinator. I think he's going to fire the OC next. Oh, wait, that's him. Maybe he should shoulder a little bit of the burden himself.
I would agree. I mean, ultimately, when you look at Chris Jones as a supposed defensive guru, I know he had a lot of jobs in Edmonton, but he got to pick all the players he wanted on that unit for parts of three seasons, and it was atrocious. Just ask Nathan Rourke in 2022 how easy it was to carve up that unit, because he did it multiple times. People were joking around that he set a number of those records because he was going against Chris Jones. Like, he has to re-earn that title of being a defensive guru. And I do find it laughable that the Ticats have come together and decided that the best guy to help this defense out is Chris Jones, who arguably headed and coached the worst team in the CFL the last couple of years. And the Tiger Cats are heading that direction, at least through the first half of 2024. You know, what I thought might happen here was that Orlando Steiner could take over the defense, and I would be feeling much better about it if I was a Ticats fan, because we have seen that from Orlando Steiner, that he is a tried and true defensive guru, but perhaps as a head coach, whatever happened there didn't end up working out so well. So I would have thought it would have been really interesting to see what Orlando Steiner could have done with that group. That said, Scott Milanovic and Chris Jones have a long-standing relationship. They've worked on multiple staffs together before. So this, in a way, from that connection perspective made sense. But Chris Jones needs to earn being called a defensive guru from this point forward.
Here's my question to you, Dunk, and I mean it legitimately. Scott Milanovic is a first-year head coach, but with the way this season has gone, the changes he has made, and the lack of results on the field, how long is his leash? Because we often talk about when coaches are struggling, well, there's nobody in the building who can replace him functionally. Well, of all the teams in the league, the Ticats have the best situation in terms of having someone who could come in as an interim, and you just mentioned his name. The guy who was the head coach before is still there as the team president. Is Milanovic going to survive the season? Is he going to survive into next season? What is your sense of his job status right now?
It's the Tiger Cats with Bob Young and Scott Mitchell, so you can never say anything is for certain because they've shown that they'll make change and bring in big names at a moment's notice. But I do think that if you're looking at this from an overall perspective, and Scott Milanovic is largely running the offense and leaving the defense to either Mark Washington or now Chris Jones, that Bo Levi Mitchell has looked pretty good. The Tiger Cats would have at least a couple more wins if Tim White caught the football earlier in the season, and that there is some, at least let's call it, intriguing upside in Taylor Powell, who has now been put into that starting role with Bo Levi Mitchell going to the bench. So perhaps he gets more time, but when you have these kinds of seasons where you're trending like you're going to be the last place team in the CFL and only have a handful, if not even that many wins to show for it, that changes are usually made in Hamilton when that happens. And it's just hard to get into the mind of those guys and hear what they're thinking, because there are some pieces there, but then it just doesn't seem like a team that plays complementary football as often as it needs with Scott Milanovic. I appreciate his insights and how truthful he is when he answers questions. I think a lot of coaches can learn from that. He tells you what he thinks, and he doesn't have much time for, you know, outside BS. But ultimately, it's wins and losses, and he's going to need some wins down the stretch to feel a little bit more comfortable in that role. Let's go to the three-minute drill. No Hodges heritage moment, because that's a John Hodge thing. Ticats receiver Luther Hakanavanu and quarterback Taylor Powell have been discharged from hospital after a pair of scary injuries on Saturday. Is that a relief?
It really is, particularly for Hakanavanu. When he went down on the first play from scrimmage, it looked like it could have been a devastating injury with long-term consequences. I'm very grateful that he was able to get taken off by ambulance, that he's okay now, and that it looks like he's not going to have any significant impacts on his life, at least in the short term. You never want to see people down like both Powell and Hakanavanu were in that game. It was devastating for the players involved, and we're glad that they're all right now. The Montreal Alouettes have brought back all-star receiver Austin Mack after he was released by the Atlanta Falcons. Is that a move that could put them over the top?
I mean, they're already at the top in the CFL at 9-1, but having Austin Mack back gives another level to this offense. He is a true number one receiver, in my opinion, in the Canadian Football League, and he has that kind of rapport with Cody Fajardo whenever he gets healthy and back on the field that is unspoken. It's an elite add for the Owls to get Mac back in Montreal. New York Jets rookie defensive back Quantez Stiggers called out the creators of Madden for his low rating, accusing them of not watching his CFL tape. Does the former Argo have a case?
Yes, he does. And I'm glad that Quantez Stiggers is finally holding Madden to account for their poor ratings of former CFL players. Every year, I buy that damn video game, which is created in Canada, partially, by the way. And I go and I make my team full of former CFL players and Canadians, and the ratings are like in the 50s for guys who are so much better than that. They just slap whatever they feel like on guys they don't know about. Do your research. Watch some three-down tape, damn it. Saskatchewan Roughriders kicker Brett Lawther said like he felt like he was the biggest liability on the team after missing 4 field goals and a loss to Montreal. Is it time for the Riders to look at other options?
I believe there at least needs to be some competition there. And the only other leg that was in training camp with the team was Joe Couch, who was designated as just a punter. Adam Korsak is there as an outstanding Australian punter with the Riders right now. But I believe you got to have somebody there. Perhaps it's Korsak that could move over and kick field goals if Lawther continues to struggle. But he has proven that in clutch moments, he's come through the majority of the time during his career with the Riders. And I'll give him credit for standing up, not showering and running out of the locker room to the media facing the questions. That's what you like to see from true leaders in a locker room. And Corey Mace talked about Lawther being a leader and that he was going to stick with him. So let's see what he does to rebound. Canadian receiver Chase Claypool was waived by the Buffalo Bills with an injury settlement. Is his NFL career over, JC?
I don't think it's over quite yet, but it's getting to it. I would suspect he gets one or two more flyer contracts, a tryout here, a practice roster stint there, but the Bills seemed high on him initially. They thought he could be a reclamation project. Clearly, by circumstance, that's not going to happen. And Claypool has not built himself a lot of goodwill in the NFL for people to give him chance after chance. Pro Football Focus graded Riders quarterback Trevor Harris as the best player in the CFL last week, awarding a mark of 93.9 for his return from injury. Did PFF get it right?
I mean, if you look at the statistics, yes. And I thought Trevor Harris played really well. But Corey Mace said it, and I think Trevor Harris would agree. You got to get in the end zone. If you got in the end zone, you don't let Brett Lawther even have the chance to miss 4 field goals. And I felt like, yes, that would have taken his PFF ranking up even higher. But you look at the week as a whole, and I don't know if you can argue for another quarterback from a data standpoint to be rated above him. Jeremiah Masoli, great story and got a win, but Harris was very efficient. JC, is there somebody you think should have been the top QB instead of Harris?
No, I thought they nailed it this week with their ratings. Harris was spectacular, but didn't get the credit because of the loss. And their number two player, the top defensive player, Tyrell Ford, who didn't have a defensive tackle at all, I also thought was just the best player on the field in that Winnipeg BC game with the interception and 2 knockdowns, one of which should also have been picked. He's the best corner in the CFL right now as a Canadian standout, just like his twin brother is pretty good at quarterback.
We end the pod on a somber note as legendary CFL offensive line coach Dan D'Orazio passed away after a battle with cancer. What does his loss mean to people around the league?
Well, it's absolutely devastating. And D'Orazio is one of the most well-respected and beloved people in the league for people who worked with him or players who were coached by him. His energy, his intensity, the things that he did for the people he was in charge of will last with them for a lifetime and will, I'm sure, translate over the generations as people that he coached become coaches and do similar things for their players. I know John Hodge is not with us this week, but I will say the thing that he always says in these circumstances. Dan D'Orazio should be in the Hall of Fame. And the fact that we do not put assistant coaches in right now is a travesty because of the things that he did in the Canadian game with the BC Lions for all those years, with all the clubs that he coached for. And then even last season, down at the University of British Columbia, coaching not one, but 2 guys who end up in the NFL for that Thunderbirds team in Theo Benedet and Giovanni Manu. Nobody has ever done that. He is truly was a special, special individual, and he will be dearly missed.
I remember Dan D'Orazio coaching at, I believe it was a 2007 U Sports East-West Bowl. At the time, it would have been CIS. And I was a quarterback in that game, but I had a couple buddies that were on the offensive line. I believe it was Ian Kelleher and Andrew Crosby, if I'm not mistaken. that were Griffin's offensive linemen that were at the East-West Bowl. And those guys talked about how it was an actual real practice that was harder than the practices we had when we were the Griffins, because Dan D'Orazio was their coach. They were going through all sorts of crazy drills. He was throwing stuff at them, but he treated every minute on the field as a minute and a way to get better at your craft. He is second to none in terms of legit energy that I've ever seen from a position coach on the field in, I'll just say, Canadian university football. That's not a slight at anybody, but this guy gets after it. And those guys talked about, you know, when we were in the dorm rooms after practices leading up to the game, that, you know, they really couldn't hang out and chill like the rest of us because they had gone through what they felt like was as close to a game as possible without going through a game, that they needed to be in the cold tub and stretch to be ready for the next day of practice. So those are the kinds of memories that will live on about Dan D'Orazio and his impact in Canadian football. That does it for this episode of the Three Down Nation podcast. Be sure to tune in for our next episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.